It's that time again. It's Saturday night, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You're listening to The Ooze. I'm your host, T.C. Downey, and with me on the air is Jeanette and Lehi Sterrell. What's going on, guys?
Yeah, I ain't taking the last name.
What's that?
I ain't taking the last name. I'm keeping mine.
So, before we get really rolling here tonight, I had to bust Lehi's chops a little bit and, make sure he knew who was going to wear the pants and his whole ordeal. Just pointing that out there. Also wanted to kind of touch down real quick and remind everybody who's tuning in right now that tomorrow night on the Outbreak Edition, it's the Best Joke Award, I guess. I've got one of those real twisted, warped, dry senses of humor, and because of that, Jason has decided that it's my decision and my decision alone that the Best Joke of the Night takes home one of those fancy new Satanic International Network t-shirts that Jason has put out. So everybody better bring their best stuff and be prepared to call in. That's just all I have to say. So another thing I wanted to mention, and for those of you tuning into the show, right here on the show page itself, you'll notice a little window that's got pictures. There's a potential to put 5 pictures there, and Jason Sorrell hit me up this past Tuesday night about the idea of offering it as advertising space for a small fee, and I'm actually sitting here kind of thinking about it. I'd like to see some kind of combo package where you can get one of the frames there of those five pictures for the show page, and also get a little audio slot going here on the actual show itself. Of course, this is experimental at this point in time, and it may or may not actually work out depending on how many of you losers out there listening can actually pony up any kind of dough to advertise your shit. I don't know. If somebody is interested in actually doing this, they need to contact Jason Sorrell directly. It's when it comes to making a buck, Mr. Sorrell's the man there, so...
Yeah, I might have to buy some advertising space so I can pimp out my writing skills.
Right on. I mean, that's like any good Sorrell would put their money where their mouth is. So I'm glad to hear that you're doing that. I told you I was going to get you tonight, Lehi.
Yeah, you got me good.
So, Jeanette, what's up? What's going on?
Not much. It's my 10th wedding anniversary tonight.
Yeah, I know. Just before the show, I thought you were getting down and dirty in those final minutes before the Ooze came on. When I first brought you on the air, I couldn't actually hear you, but there was this loud, like, I don't know, somewhere between 30s and 50s kind of love music going. And it was all broken up, and I swear I was hearing a headboard knocking too, but apparently your phone was just going ape shit since you're out in the boonies or whatever.
Yeah, my phone was back to Bucky,
yeah. Yep. All right, cool. So 10th wedding anniversary, congratulations. You know, honestly, I can't even get one look, personal look to last that long. I change up my personal appearance more than that. So 10 years, yeah, that's a lot of gardeners and pool men.
I feel old, basically.
You feel old?
It makes you feel very old. Like, I don't know. I think, like, you know, we've been through, like, I don't know, a couple presidential elections, stuff like that. I don't know, at 10 years, it's like, yeah, you know, this is going to be, you know, this is pretty much for good, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it just makes you feel like an old person.
Yeah, well, you can say that when you hit your sober anniversary. I don't think I don't think the brass is really considered old. I mean, hell, I've had siblings longer than that, so.
You're all old compared to me.
Yeah. Fuck you, Lehigh. Anyway, I'm assuming you guys did your homework tonight, so I'm just going to shut up and let you guys tell us about the Agorian. No, I'm just kidding. I'll participate in the conversation, too, here.
I hope so.
The reason I kind of picked this, and but before we even get into this, I still want to make mention that there's a couple of things that have really been irritating me. There's this asshat on Sim going under the name Red Eyes. I have to assume that it's somebody's troll account.
Oh, Lord, yeah.
I don't believe that anybody can be that fucking dense. And I'm a traditional Satanist, and I was here when this site first opened, and there's just nothing here to offer, but I'm not going to offer anything myself because I'm a traditional Satanist, damn it, and that makes me better than you.
Kind of sounds like Maybelline.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no. He told me that he's part of a cell of traditional Satanists and that he's at Sin to recruit. I was like, whatever. And I'm sorry, but it stinks of Ivan, Venom, Bogdan, whatever he goes by. It just, yeah, that's who I think it is. Pretty much have since he said, why did you guys suspend Satan? I really liked his stuff. I was like, yeah, I know exactly who you are.
Well, right here and now, if it is Ivan, whatever the fuck his name is, whatever. Yeah, dude, that's just fucking fucked up. Get a grip, bud. Anyway, I mean, it's just such a frustrating thing when I see people trying to put their position as it being somehow superior to the position of other people who are participating here on this site, especially after being there, 2 hours and having been there in the beginning. I mean, come the fuck on. There's hundreds of pages of forums there, and in the most, I don't know, unexpected, unlikely spot in those forums, you can usually run across some of the most, gold for thought, man. It's just amazing at some of the things that surface in some of these retarded conversations. So, if you don't like the carpet, you don't like the drapes, you don't like the walls, you know, that the size of the apartment's all wrong for you, fucking move.
Yep. Oh, no, that's exactly how I feel, and it's been this trend. I don't know, it's like a few people have been popping up doing that lately, like bitching about the site, and it's just like, you know, if you don't like the way the site is, leave. Cyberlane's a big place. I'm sure you can find somewhere that will love you and accept you and whatever. Just, you know, if I didn't like it there, I wouldn't be there. It's really simple.
Right. There's always... Go ahead.
I know I interrupted you, but as far as the forums go, here's an idea for the idiots that don't want to go looking for the gold. I'm sure that any of us, if we had the time or inclination, could go through it, find all the good stuff, put it in a PDF, and make it available for a price. I mean, that's what retards are good for anyway, is taking their money, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, hell, you don't even need to do all of that, man. You can just, do what I do when these asshats start fucking hitting me up for, you know, insight on Satanism. I tell them I charge... all their worldly possessions and the firstborn child for the first hour of consultation, and everything after that is dependent on how many, 6'6", 275-pound black men I can fit in their ass at one time. So, yeah, with all that being said and done, the Aghori thing, and this is why I ran back all around over that thing, that actually kind of got tripped during a discussion with Ivan, which is why if it's him trolling as Red Eyes, I'm really disappointed, because there were occasions where he at least brought a good question. I mean, I said it when he was there on there that he didn't, you know, really offer much philosophically, but the reason for that is he's just so chock full of criticism and complaint that, you know, he failed to realize that the very problem he's addressing, he's also, contributing completely to. So, you know, it is what it is.
I always liked him. I always thought he offered some insight, you know, in a strange way. I mean, I actually did like a lot of his posts, actually. It's just, I don't know, it's like, you know, my biggest beef with him was exactly what you're saying. Like, you know, the level of criticism he was throwing at people gets to the extent where it's like, you're just as bad as the people that you're calling out.
Right, right. Yeah, and that's precisely the problem. I mean, let me give a good solid example here. Over the past, 5 years, whatever it's been, that I've been familiar with the internet persona that calls themselves Chloe of the WSA352ONA. Regardless of whatever little antics or bullshit she's got going on to try to rouse her attention, even when I completely disagree with the method that she has going on, I still actually like her. You know, I don't have any kind of a beef with her at all. I think as far as modern-day thinkers go in the quote-unquote satanic circles, she's probably one of the sharper of them. And she does a really good job of relating ideas on multiple parallels. So, but anyway, I don't want to get into all of that. I thought we would start. I mean, that whole thing tripped, and the reason that the whole thing tripped was I was discussing the fact that I was really getting into Hinduism lately. You know, I have a major fascination for the goddess Kali. I'm becoming more and more saturated, interested in different personas that they have there, like the latest one that's had my eye is Ganesha. So as I'm reading through all of this stuff anyways, he asked me about the Aghori, if I'm interested in that. And I had done some reading about them, but honestly, very minimal. And I only had kind of, and I may only have kind of a wide brushstroke understanding of what's really going on with the Aghori, but I do know that they are part of a particular sect of Hinduism that's called the Sadhu or something like that, if I'm saying it correctly. I think I am. And the Sadhu are, they're holy men. They're yogis or religious people. They're called wandering monks. In specific, the Aghori are crematory kind of monks. They hang out where the bodies are being burned, and they do that so that they can be kept company by the ghosts. They specifically hang out around these fire pits and cover themselves in the ash, first because they believe that covering themselves by the ash makes them look as their god Shiva. And that to them is an honorable thing, to take up the image of what they worship. And now, I mean, the whole thing, the whole Hinduism thing, for people to really understand, they have a thing called Dharma, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. And what Dharma is their process of worship, their method of worship. It's the traditions that go into
their praxis.
The way that they, what's that?
Their praxis.
Yes, how they practice their worship. Yes, that's correct. So the Aghori have a very different Dharma, but it's still a Dharma nonetheless, and that it still borrows from the Hindu pantheon, and that in itself keeps them within the realm of Hinduism. So where I think it's awesome that they're specifically interested in tantric ideas, and they're specifically interested in forced hallucinations and hanging out with uber spooky spirits and really just getting into what we here in the West, or at least as a conventional society in the West, would look at as being like the wicked, sinister, dark.
These are the path of the left-handers. Like, is this directly tied to our book reading that we did a few months ago?
Right, right, yeah. I mean, they're it. They're the cream of the crop. The one thing, unfortunately, about the Aghori that turns me off completely, though, the one thing, I mean, because the cannibalism shit's cool, the fact that you know, somebody's body gets tossed in this fire, and after it's been cooked to a certain point, they'll run over there and grab a limb off and just start gnawing on that fucker. The part that really gets me is the devotion part. That's the part that just knocks it down for me. That's where I stop and go, oh, wait a minute. You mean you still got that ball? You still got that ball and chain tied to your ankle. You're still a devotee to something. You're still subservient to an idea. You still fall to the feet of your guru and offer your praise and worship them. I mean, at that point, it's no longer resembles the cold, mechanical, malefic image that I hold in my mind of what the Aghori should be. I mean, these are the bad boys of Hinduism right here. It should be murder, rape, pillage, cannibalism, defiance, and instead it's this kind of freaky hippie with a touch of the sinister going on, and that busts the bubble for me. But I'd be interested to see what you guys think about the Aghori.
I personally like how they're living examples of what it looks like with the path of the left hand, what we were talking about before with the yoga of power. These people are actually practicing the shit. And I really like how they're one of their symbols. And I'll maybe be clear, I actually read the stupid Wikipedia page. I didn't really get too far into it. But basically, I like that their symbol is actually the trident. I like how that parallels with images of the devil.
Yeah, well, I think that it actually is one of the sources that image has been conjured and brought into what is our modern perception of the devil, so to speak. But I mean, you can find that not just there in the Aghori, but I mean, you find the trident through anything that's associated with Shiva in Hinduism. Even Ganesh, which is the Ganesha, which is the man with the elephant head who broke one tusk off and self-sacrificed to get to a certain point in his but to get to a certain point in his spiritual development, there's actually a specific word, and its meaning does a much better job at describing what I'm talking about than the random bullshit that's coming out of my mouth. But, I mean, you guys are going to have to kind of, you know, just be patient with me tonight. I'm tired. I worked all day in the fucking sun painting a roof. So I'm sunburned on top of that, which, you know, us Irish boys cook pretty easy, so. go ahead.
For me, the thing that I found the most fascinating about it was the whole everything that exists must be perfect idea that, like, they're embracing some really kind of, Antivonian, like, nasty, dirty kind of things to uphold the idea that everything's perfect. That actually really stood out for me, more so than a lot of the other stuff about it. And I actually spent a few hours reading about it, but that was the thing that struck out the most, that, like, everything's perfect.
Right. In other words, it's already made, right? It's already...
Yeah.
As it should be. Yeah, that is one of... Like I said, I mean, overall, if they just got rid of the whole devotional thing, the whole worship thing, but the whole thing would kick ass. If they just, like, replaced it with the ideas of self... I don't want to say self-worship, really, as much as I want to say, like, self-nurturing, self-involvement, a real staunch kind of atheistic perspective kind of mixed in with the demons and spirits and all that stuff. I got absolutely no problem, as you guys know, with the idea of... what's that?
A little bit more individualistic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that where they fail is in still keeping gurus and mentors and that kind of thing, and still letting somebody else hold responsibility over their spiritual development. And, I mean, that's just at the end of it all. That's what brings them back to being orthodox and not a heterodox sect of Hinduism.
That makes sense.
So, what?
Well, yeah,
I'm sorry, what?
I said that.
No,
makes...
I was.
Eeny, meeny, miny, moe? Go ahead, FX. We'll start with you.
I was going to say, the irony is that the extreme nature of the practices to retain that kind of, sort of collective idea behind it is almost shocking in a way, because honestly, when you're reading about it, it's more extreme than, I don't know, anything I see anybody preaching in any other LHP circles. You know, certainly, I mean, I was a little like, whoa, this is wild. This is definitely, you know, very, very dark. And yet, it's like it said, it's still got that edge that softens it completely.
Well, I mean, what is absolutely fascinating about it is the fact that the entire rest of Hinduism seems to completely dislike and shun this particular devotion. It's crazy because it's like worshiping God wrong. It's like going into a Christian church and saying, you know, wait a minute, I believe in Jesus Christ. I believe he's my... You know, my doorway, my ticket up to Cloud City with the 72 ambiguous or hermaphroditic angels or virgins and shit or whatever it is, but I believe that it's not about asking for forgiveness, but doing as much wrong as I can. And I mean, that really is the equivalent of the Aghori sect.
Definitely go into the taboo quite a bit. It seems like it's a little bit more... I guess it would be, about, like you're saying, about as extreme as a as the straw man Satanist going into a church eating a baby or something and saying, I'm going to heaven. But what I was going to say was, it seems to me, though, that because of their approach, that they may understand enlightenment a little bit better than the sheep that follow the other side.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely, I don't know, they're definitely out there, man. I mean, I watched multiple documentaries on it, did some reading this week, just, trying to get myself prepared, because I said I'd come to the show with something to offer for once, rather than just rambling my fat mouth for an hour or 2 hours or whatever about nothing in particular. And what's really crazy is as I was watching these documentaries and reading this stuff, I was really picturing these very primal people. I mean, doing things the way that our ancestors must have done them at some point. I pictured them painting images on cave walls. It's that archaic. It's that ancient in its nature. And, I mean, it's a crazy thing. They completely deviate themselves. They no longer have contact with their families. They no longer, spend any time among the living. All of their time is spent in this crematory area.
Yeah, with the ashes of the dead all over them, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, how fucking cool is that? You walk around all day long with the ashes of dead bodies spread across you, tripping out, looking at rocks and thinking they're possessed and shit. Some of the things that I watched in these documentaries, these people were convinced when they hit illness that the gods had done it to them, and yet they'd still go worship. That's what blows me away. You full out think that this particular entity is responsible for whatever ailment you're suffering from, and yet you're going to totally go over there and kiss their ass. It's the ultimate embodiment of the pussy. And it's in the most badass sect of Hinduism, so I don't get it.
Well, how do they compare to other Path of the Left Hand practitioners from the past?
Well, how do they compare? The sadhus, that's it. The sadhus are all primarily left-hand path, as far as I understand it now. I could be wrong. Again, I'm just getting into this stuff, so I could absolutely be wrong about that. But they have more sexual, taboo-oriented practices, and they're not as extreme as cannibalism or bathing yourself in the ashes of the dead. But they do have the things that they do.
I have to wonder, though, with the cannibalism, though, I wonder if they have issues with prions, if you know what I'm talking about.
Prion, you mean like getting the twitches or the shakes because of it?
Like prions are like these little proteins that basically, let's think about mad cow disease. Mad cow disease is basically when cows were eating their own kind, like they were unknowingly cannibalizing. And so they find that with cannibalism, sometimes you eat the prions in another person, and when these radical proteins come in contact with, say, brain tissue, it kind of turns into other prions, so kind of turns your brain to, I don't know how to explain it, I guess a sponge, but it basically fucks you up. So I wonder if these people are tripping out when they're eating these corpses, if they are in fact eating prions.
I would say they're definitely tripping out. This one dude in this documentary I saw, he said that when he smells the meat cooking, it's it's the most intense craving he's ever had. He has to run over there and grab a piece off of it. It's the way that he described it, you would think it was a heroin addict talking about their needle, or the crackhead talking about his glass pipe. The second he smells the residue from that, he's just got to have it.
That's actually true about human meat, is that it's addictive.
Right. I mean, I don't know for sure, but I know we were talking about the same basic thing when I said, when you get the shakes, because that's something I've seen in a lot of movies. And I tend to believe it's probably true. If you eat other people, you will get the shakes. You'll kind of twitch.
Man, when I was reading about them, I'm like, hey, these guys seem pretty fucking badass. I'm like, but I don't know if I could get away with eating people here. I mean, I wonder if a lot more Americans would get into that kind of shit if it was legal to eat human flesh.
If it was legal to eat human flesh, dude, that's probably all I'd have. There's so many idiots out there, it'd be the perfect excuse to slaughter them. That's food, man. I'm eating it. It's not murder. I kill them because I'm hungry. What's that?
Eat the rich.
Yeah, fuck yeah. Well, eat the idiots in general. Rich and poor alike. That's the way to even it all out.
Good point. Yeah, I mean, we have so many fucking people. I know this is a bit of a tangent, but... Yeah, there's so many people on this planet and there's a lot of starving people as well. I don't see why cannibalism wouldn't be an option, other than what we were talking about with the prions.
Right on. Well, I mean, there's got to be a way to get kosher meat. You know, you have to be able to cook it to a certain point, and it'd be okay, I'm guessing.
Well, I think that I doubt most people have prion. I think that. The reason why people are so scared of, you know, the people, other than it just doesn't sound right, but I think it was there was an indigenous group of people that tended to have the prions in their systems down on somewhere in Polynesia, I think, or maybe it was New Zealand or some what the fuck was it? I don't remember, but when they found that there was a cannibalistic tribe of people that they ritualistically ate their own kind when they died. You know, they put them on fire, kind of like what we were talking about with the Agori, sort of. But they thought that if you ate a dead person, that you'd gain some of their strengths, like other cultures, I think. But they found that this particular group of people actually had this issue. I think you can actually get this disease from bat, other kinds of meat, too.
Right on. I think the real moral of tonight's show, if we have to have one, and I use the word moral loosely, well, just because, but the moral of tonight's show is if an Agori invites you to a barbecue, turn them down politely. Anyway, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and throw the call-in number out there. Again, 347-989-1371. If you know something about the Agori or the Sadhus that hasn't been mentioned on the show yet, now's definitely the time to kind of chime in. I also wanted to, again, because it's a halfway point in the show, remind everybody that tomorrow night on the Outbreak Edition, we're going to have the best dirty, raunchy joke competition, and we're giving away a free Satanic International Network t-shirt, the new design by Jason Sorrell. You guys definitely need to tune in for that. Call in, tell your jokes. Get back to the Agori. Yeah, there's really not a whole lot of the rest of the story as far as the basics of it go. The rest of it really has to get into the types of practices that they do, I believe there is a particular, and it's probably the tantras, that I believe there's a particular set of religious texts that that they follow. I know the entire, the golo, that the idea of it is for them to be liberated from the cycle of reincarnation, which is why they live their life among the dead. I guess the idea is, if you're already surrounding yourself with the dead and you're alive, then when you die, it's time to just let things be as they are. You're just going to come back and hang out with the dead again anyway or something. So,
Are other Hindus trying to break free from samsara as well? They're just taking the opposite approach, is what I'm gathering.
Right. Well, the whole thing of it is that everybody else has got the idea that if they do these rituals and these ceremonies and they keep these particular tenets, that, you know, the end goal is that they merge eventually into whatever energy is Brahma. And I think that's the ultimate goal, is to move past samsara and into Brahma. So,
according to the Wikipedia article, they when it was mentioning the trident, it was talking about the specific practice of meditation. I guess they call it nirvikalpa samadhi. I know I'm butchering it, but mentioned in there, they were talking about kundalini.
Yeah. Kundalini obviously is it is an energy that's released from that particular chakra, which is associated with the growing region. So the idea of that is that this energy is pushed up through the crown, and I mean that's really how you get to moving past to the next whatever eternal all being is. I'm not sure if my phone's doing all that echoing or if somebody else is.
That was definitely me. Sorry about that.
Yeah, that's no problem. But yeah, I mean, Kundalini itself is interesting. There is a author on white sex magic, I think it is, that he wrote on Samuel War or something like that. He writes pretty extensively on the use of Kundalini energies to perform these, I don't know, magical tricks or whatever. I mean, that's something else, I guess, that is relative to the ideas of the Aghori. They believe that they receive tantric powers once they've gone through a particular process and they've taken on this life as an Aghori, this discipline. So, the same kind of principle applies between the two.
Now, I wonder, when they do tantric sex rituals, do they do it in the ashes of the dead? Did you find anything about that?
I did not find anything out about that. As a matter of fact, there's actually very little reference to the sexual practices themselves. They seem to be more, the general public seems to be more fascinated with the bone dust and the meat eating and stuff like that. So,
now, back to Kundalini, though. I know I want to go on a little tangent here, but I was arguing with somebody about experience, like spiritual experiences on sin, and they brought up Kundalini, and they mentioned that in the DSM-4, there is an actual disorder associated with Kundalini, where sometimes people fuck up their brains. Do you know anything about that? I mean, I've seen the disorder listed in there, and my thought was, before I let you explain, my thought was that anybody can, there are certain things you can do that you can act out that will cause your brain to do certain things. And then my thought is, well, people that fuck up their brain, it's just that. I can't necessarily say whether or not it was actually supernatural or whatnot. I can't really say for certain, but it just seems wouldn't that be kind of dangerous?
To do things to alter your brain chemicals?
Well, like doing Kundalini and breaking your brain with it.
I would assume anything, if you do enough damage in one shot, would not be a good thing. But it has to be akin to chasing other types of euphoria. You're changing your experience through whatever, you know, whether it's through a natural process. I mean, you could look at these chicks that get off by being strangled when they're having sex. The lack of the oxygen flow causes that rush of adrenaline into their brain, and it just kind of kicks it off. I would assume it's the same sort of thing. I'm not actually familiar with any psychological disorder, but it doesn't surprise me there would be one. I mean, we have a psychological disorder for absolutely everything. If somebody has a habit of scratching their ass, there's some psychologist out there that's deemed it a psychological disorder, or at least a symptom of one.
Yeah, I think when disorders are characterized, and actually there's a part of the DSM that explains that something is not a disorder unless it's a behavior that gets in the way of you living life the way you want. So basically anything can be a disorder. But what is it about Kundalini that would actually break someone?
Well, I mean, if you think about what it would be doing to your body chemicals, the idea is that you're forcing yourself into a different psychological state. So you're changing the way that the neurons are firing. You're altering what chemicals are being released. It'd be just like any other lab experiment where you're just walking down the road, picking up this vial of that and this beaker of this, and fuck it, let's mix them all together and see if we can produce something cool.
Or it's like drugs.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a self-induced high, euphoria. I mean, we can do it. We do it all the time. Ever had a runner's high?
Yep. Actually, you were talking about the strength thing, the pass out thing. I remember actually when I was in junior high, me and some of my friends did the pass out game. And you know what? I remember that when I was out, I saw some crazy ass shit. I can understand why some people might do that for an experience. It's not safe, obviously, but yeah, you'll see some shit.
I mean, I don't. Go ahead, FS. I'm sorry. Jeanette?
Huh? Oh, I'm here. Oh no, y'all were talking about the pass out. No, y'all were talking about the pass out game. I was just like, wow, I had never even heard of that. So I was just Googling it to see what it was. I was like, okay.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I've ever confessed this on news or not, but I'm a bit of an adrenaline junkie myself. I will do things just to get that rush, that high, drive fast, whatever, push the limits. Ghost riding used to be one of my favorite things to do when I was like 15, 16 years old. Clip the headlights off on a bridge and go like 100 miles an hour, and sometimes I'd be over in the wrong lane, sometimes I'd be in that lane, just the idea that someone could actually plow right the fuck into you, or you could fuck up and hit something because you didn't see it in time, exhilarating. So yeah, that's that. Well, we've actually got a caller on the air right now, so I'm going to go ahead and bring them on. It's area code 720. What's on your brain?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just listening right now. I just tuned in, so I wouldn't have anything insightful to add.
Oh, don't worry. That seems to be the case all the way around. So it's all good. I'll go ahead and put you on mute again, man. And if you do have something to say, you'll need to hang up and call back in, okay?
Okay. Your switchboard doesn't show when somebody has their hand up?
It will show when you hang up, yes, and it will show when you call back in. But I will have no way to know if you have something to interject once I put you on.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like on BTR, like it'll actually put like a little icon of somebody's hand next to the phone number. It's like when they call in, it instructs them, you know, hey, press 1 if you'd like to talk or whatever. And then it puts that little icon next to each phone number.
Yeah, see, they moved to the studio like 6 months ago, so and it doesn't have that feature anymore.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, yeah, I'll just hang up, call back in if I have some dad.
Yeah, thanks, man. Man, I'll tell you what, the switchboard is cooler in one way because the chat room's actually on the same page as the switchboard now, and it's not like it used to be where you're going back and forth between tabs, and if you had, like, reference material spread across your screen, you know, it could get to be a real big fucking mess trying to follow conversations and commentary and trying to, you know, at the same time keep an eye out for callers and stuff, but, you know, that was a cool feature that he mentioned. I remember that back in hell prior to when they switched to the studio, which, man, it's got to have been at least a good 6 months now. Anything further you guys want to add to the whole Agori conversation before we just go ahead and shoot the shit for the last 10 minutes?
Do you have anything, FS?
No, I mean, I don't know. I think we've already kind of nailed it pretty well.
I know.
That was me shutting up so you could talk, Lehigh.
Oh, okay. I kind of lost my train of thought, but it always seems like with this left-hand path type stuff that it always goes back to, for me, a train of thought where the purpose in my life is to experience different things. Just, you know,
right.
Get the breadth of human experience. Because, you know, people talk about the different afterlives or different spiritual goals or whatever, but it just seems like I don't really know that that shit exists or not, and maybe it does, but for me to do those kinds of acts, it's not to get that end goal. It's to experience the now as much as possible. So when it comes, and I know it's hard to say in front of other people, but cannibalism is something that I've wanted to try before. There's the
right,
guy.
And I
kill me.
I myself have the same thing thought. I wouldn't mind cooking somebody up once or twice to see what it's like. The 720 number did call back in, so I'm going to bring them on real quick. 720, what's on your brain?
Yeah, so I did think of one question that I had, and I don't know if anybody on the line is the correct person to answer that or not, but is anyone here like actually in the OTO?
In the OTO? No. No, although I think Jeanette's pretty familiar with a lot of their stuff. So.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Thulima in general, but no, not a member of the OTO.
I mean, what are your feelings on the OTO? Because we just in Denver just had a like recognized lodge or whatever it's called, like open up, and they just got their charter and stuff, and. Probably about 2 years ago, I joined the Masons, and I think I kind of made a mistake with that because it seems like none of them want to, like, actually get into, like, occult stuff or, like, even acknowledge that that's, in fact, kind of a important part of like the tradition of masonry. So it's like, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, if it's, I don't know. I would say that I would say it really is going to depend on you because, you know, Crowley towards the end of his life had issues with both the AA and the OTO collectively. They both sort of broke up and then came back together after he died. And it's an important thing to remember because there's been a lot of changes as a result of that. But if you want to get, you know, if that's something you want to do to get sort of a good solid understanding in that under a very organized, structured format, I would definitely go for it.
Yeah, I think that my goal is just really to expose myself to like more stuff and see what else is out there. I have heard like criticisms from some people that like, and I don't know at all what it's like in my state or your state or anything else, but like the OTO like can actually get kind of wild because there's like a lot of younger people there, and I'm kind of past that point in my life. You know, I'm married with kids and stuff, so. I don't know if that's the right organization for me or not.
Oh, you have the same problem I do, which is that most of the time whenever any group of, you know, anyone gets together and you go there, it's mostly, you know, 20-year-old idiots, and it's like, you know, you want to correspond with people your age that actually take it seriously. I don't know. Where I live, there's a study group, and I've been to their stuff a few times, and it's relatively solid, but it's not affiliated with any specific organization, you know. So mm-hmm. I got lucky there, but I mean, it's not, you know, like I said, it would just be a matter of at least, you know, I'd go fill them out beforehand, certainly, you know. If it's going to be a bunch of 20-year-olds that are looking at Scarlet Women, it's probably not something you're going to want to pursue.
Yeah, that's what I've heard, is that like a lot of younger lodges or whatever they're called, like, you know, they're mainly like 20-somethings, like looking to like hook up and stuff, and that's not what I'm really looking for.
I'd like to chime in here real quick and say, although I don't know very much in terms of the physical organization of the OTO and stuff like that, I do know as far as Freemasonry goes, I've had my experiences with them. I have my degrees and done the Blue Lodge thing, and I know that depending on what lodge you're at, you can actually get some good rapport, some good occult discussion going, and it's just a matter of being selective. And one of the ways that you can do that is by taking a look at what articles they have published on their lodge website. I know there's one in Phoenix that they do a lot of occult stuff. I've seen a lot of works come out doing some comparisons from the Masonic ways to Kabbalah and kind of doing relation that way. They tie together a lot of the different symbols of Solomon and stuff like that. It's all there right on the website.
Our lodge is like, I mean, a lot of these lodges in Colorado don't have websites, or if they do, they're pretty shabby. I mean, just to give you an idea, like our lodge is like probably, you know, a lot of younger guys, but most of them are coming in from like the military and stuff and like, you know, not into that at all. And then like the rest of the lodge is like guys that are, you know, 65, 70 and up, you know, and they're like extremely uncomfortable with the idea that there's anything that has to do with the occult and masonry at all. Like they look at it really as like a Christian organization, which is kind of surprising to me because like just the stuff I've gone through at the Blue Lodge so far, it's like very deep in there, but it's like there's really no room for like discussion of the stuff, you know, or looking at it from like a non-Judeo-Christian perspective, you know.
Well, here's what I would offer to that. All it takes is the seed of a thought being planted, and you'll be surprised how quick the devil sneaks in, if you know what I'm saying. So would definitely keep up the efforts of trying to keep the conversations focused. I mean, there's another thing you have to consider when you're dealing with folks that supposedly carry Christian traditions. In its own right, it's just as ritual oriented, mystical, superstitious, Gnostic as any other belief system on this planet. It's just they choose to ignore the associations that they'll spout. So if you're good at weaving the conversation, you oftentimes can stumble across little neat things that you didn't expect that are directly related to some aspect of deeper esoteric understanding. One good solid example of that is my grandmother on my father's side is quote-unquote devout Catholic, yet she'll spend time discussing how she reads the tea leaves with me if I get the conversation going right.
I definitely agree with you. Like, I don't, you know, looking at world religions and stuff, I don't think Christianity is any less superstitious or dogmatic or ritualistic or even, you know, there's mysticism, you know, woven in it. But, you know, I guess to me it's like, you know, I've been indoctrinated in this culture. Like, I know all about that stuff. Like, that's not that interesting to me, you know, whereas, like, you know, looking deeper, looking at other traditions and stuff, or things that have been weeded out. Like, a lot of us in the United States grew up one way or another in, like, some sort of Protestant faith where they really kind of threw most of the mysticism in the garbage, you know. And obviously the superstition's still there, but, like, the mysticism was just kind of thrown to the wayside.
Right on. Well, not to cut this short, man, but we got just about a minute left in the show, so we're going to do our goodbyes and roll the outro. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, thank you, and thanks for your feedback.
Amen. All right, guys, on that note, should we get out of here?
Yeah.
Sounds about right.
All right. Have a good night, guys, and everybody remember to show out tomorrow night to the best dirty joke. I swear to God, if I only hear one joke and I don't get a choice and who gets the T-shirt, I'll protest somehow. I'll make you guys sit and listen to me read a book for an hour.
I'll try to remember some good ones.
All right. I'm just saying, everybody better be there and doing this fucking thing.
Hell yeah.
All right, let's get out.
Have a good one.
All right.